Oh, press conference.
I call to order the meeting for the Transportation and Finance Policy Committee to order. I do see there is a quorum present. I'm going to ask for a motion to approve the minutes if Representative Fogelman.
Thank you, Chair Myers. I move to approve the minutes from February 24th.
Representative Fogelman moves the minutes. And I would ask if there's any discussion. Seeing no discussion, all those in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion prevails. Minutes are approved. Today we have two bills up by Representative Murphy. We have House File 376 and House File 367. Representative Murphy, we will do House File 376 first. If you would like to move your bill to be referred over to the Environment Committee.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would.
So Representative Murphy's moving his bill 376 to be referred over to the Environment Committee. Representative, if you want to go ahead and start.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Before I start, I saw the chastisement that Chair Kosnick did to poor Vice Chair Myers last time, so I did bring cookies today to share with the group. And so this is my first hearing in Transportation Committee, so I hope you like chocolate chip. So I'll start with my bill. So this bill repeals the California car mandate. The California car mandate adds mandates for the auto manufacturers. It hurts our auto industry. It actually requires car dealers to carry more EVs that can drive up the cost. And limits consumer choices. You know, what's unique about Minnesota is that we're not like California. We have some different driving conditions. In the wintertime, our driving is quite a bit different than California's. And so range anxiety is a real thing here. And so those are a few of the things that are most concerning about it. The Minnesota, the MTCA and Governor Walz adopted these California clean car mandates. They're not actually voted for in legislation. And so we had bureaucrats and the governor decide what rules we wanted, and they chose that we should pick a drop-down window from the California mandate. Minnesota should make these decisions, not Californians or bureaucrats. So with that, I'll move to the testifiers that we have to talk a little bit more about the California car mandate.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. List of testifiers we have, when you are called for, please state your name and who you're with. First one is Frank Klausch? Kolisch, sorry.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Frank Kolesch. I'm Assistant Commissioner for Air and Climate Policy at the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. I'm here to testify in opposition to House File 376, as we don't think the rules need to be repealed. Minnesota is already more than halfway through model year 2025, which is the only model year to which the rule applies. The rule provides enough first-year compliance credits for automobile manufacturers to comply, in addition to the credits that they will earn from their in-state sales of zero-emission vehicles. In 2024, qualifying zero-emission vehicles made up approximately 6 to 7% of the new car sales in Minnesota, which is on target with what the Clean Cars Minnesota rule anticipated. Repealing the rule at this midpoint of the compliance year is unnecessary and will not provide any substantial benefit to the automobile manufacturers or to the state. Automobile manufacturers are the only entities regulated by the Minnesota Clean Cars Rule. It creates no regulatory obligations on dealers or consumers. The rule ensures that Minnesotans have the choices to purchase the cleanest type of vehicle that they want. In addition, cars, pickup trucks, SUVs, and vans are still significant contributors to harmful air pollutants in Minnesota. According to our 2025 Air We Breathe report, which is a legislative report that we submitted in early January of this year, transportation sources are 42% of the risk from air pollution statewide. And the risks from air transportation sources in the metro area are higher than that. These types of vehicles are also significant contributors of nitrogen oxides, or NOx, as the acronym has said, which reacts in the air with other air pollutants during the summer to form ground-level ozone. The Air We Breathe report also shows that we've seen a recent uptick in ozone levels in Minnesota, and we need to continue to reduce pollution from vehicles to protect people's health. The levels in 2023 range from 91% of the federal standards to 97% of the federal standards for southern Minnesota and the Twin Cities metro area. For northern Minnesota, the ranges were 89 to 86% of the federal standards. This clearly shows that Minnesotans are being impacted by air pollution. Ensuring Minnesotans have clean air to breathe is critical to the state's economy and a core part of our mission. Looking at greenhouse gases, the MPCA and Department of Commerce's 2025 biennial greenhouse gas emission report, which was a legislative report we submitted in January, mid-January of 2025, shows that the transportation sector remains the largest greenhouse gas emitting sector in the state. Within that sector, light duty trucks, again, the pickup trucks, SUVs, vans, and minivan type of vehicles, are the largest sources of greenhouse gas emissions in the transportation sector. And passenger cars are the third largest source of greenhouse gases in the transportation sector. Both of these classes of vehicle are covered by the Clean Cars Minnesota rule. While the report only shows data through 2022, which is before the Clean Cars rule went into effect, it shows that we need to continue our work to reduce climate pollution and air pollution from these vehicles on our roads that will allow us to meet our statewide greenhouse gas emission reduction goals in 216H, including the goal for net zero emissions by 2050 for the state. For the reasons that I've expressed above, the MPCA is in opposition of House File 376. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Next testifier up is Scott Lambert. Please introduce yourself for the committee.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. My name is Scott Lambert. I'm president of the Minnesota Automobile Dealers Association. Thank you for allowing me to testify in support of House File 376, and thank you, Representative Murphy, for introducing this bill. Mr. Chairman, under the so-called Minnesota Clean Car Rule, California bureaucrats are in charge of Minnesota's vehicle emission system. California bureaucrats are in charge of what vehicles our dealers can sell, and California bureaucrats have the final say on what cars consumers can purchase. To be clear, California, through the California Air Resources Board, writes its rules to cope with California's unique air quality issues. Minnesota has zero impact on what those rules say, and California is uninterested in Minnesota's opinion. When the Walz administration adopted the California car standards, they put California in charge. And since the rule came into effect, the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency has abdicated their responsibility to those affected by the rule and to the state of Minnesota. For example, under the California rules, they have strict guidelines about registering non-compliant vehicles in a state under California emissions control. But for the last year, the MPCA has refused to answer our request for information on how this portion of the rules will be enforced. We've even asked Driver and Vehicle Services to help with this request, but we still received nothing helpful from MPCA. And you heard earlier spokesman from the MPCA say that dealers are not regulated, yet we are the most affected by this rule. They say that as if just by saying that it's true, even though it is not true. While we strongly oppose this rule from being enacted, we understood that once enacted, we had a responsibility to make sure our dealers were compliant with the law and not selling our customers a vehicle they could not register. But the state of Minnesota walked away from its responsibility to provide guidance on this matter. If Minnesota is to go forward with clean car standards beyond 2025, it will need to update its rule to coincide with California's new guidelines on this subject. And this new rule would result in a ban on the sale of gasoline burning vehicles by model year 2035. That is just 9 model years away. Currently, Minnesota consumers are purchasing electric vehicles at a rate of 6% a year. The reason for this modest adoption rate, I believe, is obvious. It's cold here in Minnesota. Electric vehicles do not perform well in the cold weather and can lose a major portion of their range. We don't all live in Southern California. Minnesota has also made no meaningful investments in public charging stations, making long trips problematic. To be clear, Minnesota dealers are not anti-electric vehicles. The dealers have invested millions into their stores for things like charging stations, bigger hoists, larger service areas, education of staff, and of course the vehicles themselves. At our association, we hired an electric vehicle program director to assist the dealers in getting ready for the coming electric vehicle age. Our auto show has an EV neighborhood every year to showcase the technology and educate consumers on how to operate and live with electric vehicles. So while we're not anti-EVs, we are anti-EV mandates. We have been very clear that we think the California sales mandate telling consumers what to buy is a bad idea. We would encourage the House to pass House File 376. We believe the California rule is obsolete. The MPCA has shown no interest in managing their own regulation, and it does not fit Minnesota's climate. Thank you for your time, and I'd be happy to stand for any questions.
Yep. Thank you for your testimony. We're going to get through the list of testifiers first before questions. Next on the list is Bentley Graves.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. My name is Bentley Graves with the Minnesota Chamber of Commerce. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Largely, I just would refer you to a letter that we include in your packet that kind of tries to summarize at a pretty high level comments that we submitted with the Office of Administrative Hearings back in December of 2019 when this rulemaking process was taking place. But just to put a fine point on what you'll find in that letter is a real concern from us stated then and reiterated now about the idea of allowing state agencies here in Minnesota to just essentially bring into state real estate law rules and regulations from other states without direction from the legislature, without input from the legislature, without approval from the legislature. I listened closely to testimony from the PCA, and one of the things that was said was, you know, repealing this mid-year would have very little effect. We don't need to repeal this. And that may be true given some of the other things that he said, but I think, you know, one of the things that we come to this conversation with is a real concern about the precedent that this rulemaking set. And in some cases, you know, it's never too late to right that wrong, and this bill would help us do that. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. I don't have anybody else on the list, but if there's anybody from the public that would like to testify. Okay. Not seeing anybody, we can go to member discussion or questions. And I had Representative Jones first.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Murphy, for the opportunity to speak on this bill. So as I understand it, there is a Clean Cars 1 and a Clean Cars 2. And I'm wondering what Minnesota has adopted.
Are you referring to the low emissions and the zero emissions as part of the rulemaking?
So in our House research summary, it talked about a Clean Cars 1 and a Clean Cars 2. And so wondering if you can help me understand.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you for the question. I would refer to Mr. Burroughs maybe to help out with that. That's not something that that's in the law that I've seen. Ours just says the carbon, the clean carbon rules or clean car rules. And it's very descriptive. It's California's information.
Mr. Burris or?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ela could better address the question.
Mr. Chair and members, Bob Ela from House Research. My colleague, Mr. Burris, asked me to prepare the. Thank you. Asked me to prepare the bill summary for this bill. And that is what I did, and that's what the question refers to. As I understand it, and as you all know, this did not go through the legislature. So
I wasn't required to do my usual, thorough job in research. But as I understand it, Minnesota has adopted the Clean Cars 1 standard, not the Clean Cars 2 standard.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Eloff. So I think that's really important because I think, as I heard from your testifiers, that, there's concern about requiring, that 35% of new models are EVs by 2026 and 100% by 2040. That's in Clean Cars 2. We have not adopted that. So, yeah.
Next on the list we have
Respond to that.
Sure.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. That's why I understand it also.
Okay. Next up, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, can you explain to me, if we repeal this, what is the – I get we can say we're not – we're fighting back against California, but, like, tangibly – what changes for the industry? Like, what specifically can they now, if we repeal it, do that they couldn't do before?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. The way I understand it, these guidelines that are set in this in the Clean Car rules are specific rules that were adopted by the governor and the MTCA. And so what we're suggesting is that those are rolled back. Those are repealed. This is for 2025 vehicles. And so we don't have a rule in place for 26 or 27 unless we go back to rulemaking. But I'm just going to go with the comment that Mr. Graves made, and this is about precedent. Are we going to let California lawmakers decide what laws that we adopt here? And we have no say. And so that's the reason why we're here. So the end result of repealing this is really to set that precedent. The 26 and 27 have to go back to rulemaking, that's my understanding, before they move forward.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kraft, do you have a follow-up?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. So appreciate your points, Representative Murphy, but you didn't answer my question. My understanding, listening and reading about this and then listening to testifiers, it doesn't appear that repealing this has much of an impact. We're pretty much all the way through. So I appreciate, and I'll also say I thought Mr. Lambert did a fantastic job at saying California per minute, about as much as you can. So I got that input. If we repeal this or don't, does it change the impact of whether we decide to adopt future standards or not? Does it have any impact on it?
Representative, you want to answer?
Sure, Ms. Kraft. The 2025 model year, that you're right, that is the target of this. But rulemaking is not out. If we're going to allow another dictate to come from governors and the MPCA and bypass legislation, that's worth bringing it up. So the reason for this hearing and the repeal is to make sure that that isn't part of the process again, and we didn't have a say in the process the last time.
Representative Kraft, do you have a follow-up?
I do. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, Representative Murphy, if you wanted to say don't do this again, you could have put out a bill out that said don't do this again, versus this bill here, which really does nothing other than trying to send a message. One of your testifiers mentioned that that we have adopted a California sales mandate. Is there any sales mandate, any mandate whatsoever that end customers have to buy vehicles as part of Clean Cars 1 that we have adopted?
Maybe up to my testifier for that, Mr. Lambert.
Sure. Welcome back, Mr. Lambert.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Kraft. If I could kind of go back to your previous question before I answer that. There are two emission standards in this country. There's a federal emission standard and a California emission standard. And Minnesota has decided, and other states have decided, to opt into the California standard. If we opt out, we go back, we just default back into the federal standard. So we're not left without an emission standard.
If I may.
Do you have a follow-up question? You had another.
Well, to answer question.
He went to a different question, so I'd like to address that right now.
Sure, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So when this goes to its natural at the end point, my understanding is that we revert to the federal emission standards. So that is going to happen anyway, right? So my question, I think the question you were asked to come up here for was whether in Clean Cars 1 there was ever a mandate on consumers that they needed to buy certain vehicles. Simple yes or no.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, there is a mandate on dealers to buy vehicles from manufacturers. The manufacturers will load dealers with vehicles that the dealers need to find customers for. We do not take vehicles on consignment. We buy them from the manufacturers and then sell them to customers.
Thank you. Representative Kraft, you good?
Another comment.
Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't know that that's my understanding of the Clean Cars One, but regardless, what I would say on this is about to, we're just about through with this, right? If you wanted to say, hey, don't do this again, bring a bill that says don't continue to do this, and let's talk about that. This is purely a signaling bill that really doesn't do anything, and I just would urge everyone to vote no and to not really, in many respects, waste our time on this. Thanks.
Representative Joy.
Thank you, Chair. And Representative Murphy, and maybe this is for your testifier, Lampert, too. So my district, we border North Dakota. So does this bill, by getting rid of this, does this put the dealers on my side of the river, on Minnesota side compared to North Dakota, put them back in the play, or does it give them more of a level playing field instead of put them at a disadvantage?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Joy, that under normal circumstances, if the MPCA was doing their job and regulating sales of non-compliant vehicles, dealers would have to be very careful about taking a vehicle, say, on dealer trade from a North Dakota dealer, because it might not be compliant with California standards. They have to get the right vehicle, or it wouldn't be able to be registered. The MPCA has abdicated that right so far. They have refused to give us guidance on this, and we've been left in a lurch for the 6 months that this model year has been in effect. So we are uncertain and very cautious about taking the wrong car and giving it to a Minnesota customer in the event they can't register it.
Thank you. Representative Joy, any follow-up?
Yeah, so this here, repealing this now, I think is a good thing, Representative Murphy, to bring forward. You know, with my district, what we're facing across the river. And when people go looking for vehicles online and you want that perfect car and be able to get your first vehicle purchase and you see it across the river, and they do dealer trades all the time. We see this all the time. You know, I've known people that have waited 3-4 weeks for their car to come in because they're doing a dealer trade. This is how we can get back to that and put in tools back in their toolbox instead of taking them away. So I do appreciate this, Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Representative Joy. I'm going to try to somewhat stay in order, bouncing back and forth. So, Representative Berg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for the author. So, I'm not completely clear where you're coming from on this legislation, but if you don't worry about the impact to the environment or people's health, surely you can recognize that there's an economic impact to this. And if you don't, there's a great letter in our packet that talks about remaining competitive in the global clean energy economy, also remaining competitive here in Minnesota as we are second in the nation for EV vehicles, and this will impact us economically in terms of our grid capacity and in our infrastructure, charging stations, et cetera. So just curious about your plan to fill in that economic loss.
Representative Murphy.
Yep. Thank you, Representative. I would just say that, an economic boost is not when cars are valued higher because they have different emissions on them. It's not because dealers have to inventory cars longer to make sure they can sell it. That's not an economic boom, especially if you're a dealer. And so when we're talking about economic boom, there's a lot of factors involved. This is 6% of the cars. There are some real problems with cars in the country where we drive. You can't make it a lot of times. I was with a person that bought one for his business. The salesperson used it, drove it one day because he only made it halfway back to the business. And so there's other parts of it that are cost prohibitive. And that's why they're not buying them. So when you force them to buy them, we really are forcing them to spend dollars when they wouldn't have to. So it's more than just your what you're saying. There's definitely a cost to the retailers. And the other thing that I'd say, just as, you know, a fact, kind of going back to, you know, why the bill, but these cars are going to be in play for a while, and they'll affect the market, like Representative Joy talked about. They're going to affect the market until the last 25s are sold. So there is more time than when the people start buying the 26 model year. There is some time to make some corrections so that we can make it easier for retailers and easier for consumers. And so that would also be another reason. So,
Representative Berger, any follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure that answered the question, but thank you.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for the Assistant Commissioner Kolesh, if he's able to answer some questions. So, thanks, Mr. Kolesh, for being here. I got a couple questions in a little bit of a series. So first of all, you said that this is a redundant thing or it's not necessary because at the end of this year, these rules are going to expire. Can you first of all confirm that that is the case and that these rules will be gone at the end of this year? And then secondly, can you give us an idea of what the governor, of what the MPCA is looking at into the future? Because are you going to do us dirty like you did already and make a new rule or adopt California's again when they have their new one? Or are we looking at reverting back to the national, the federal standard with regard to this? If you can answer those two questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative. I can confirm that model year 2025 is the only year that Clean Cars Minnesota rule will apply to. With model year 2026, we will be under the federal standards. As far as the next question, we are tracking what is happening at the federal level for what the federal emission standards, vehicle emission standards, are going to be. Under the previous administration, the model year 2027 and beyond vehicle emission standards were updated, and they are stringent, and so we are looking at what's going to happen at the federal level and all options. No decisions have been made at this point, and it will be dependent upon what happens at the federal level because there are steps that EPA would need to take. They took a step in January 6th of 2025, just a little over a month ago, where they did grant California the waiver for their Advanced Clean Cars 2 rule. That's a necessary step, but now EPA has indicated that they are looking at that waiver again.
Representative Olson, a follow-up.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you for the answer to that. I guess I'll just go by saying that I really dislike it in our legislature when we just defer and take what our responsibility is as legislators. We were duly elected by our constituents to make these decisions. Passing off to an agency is laziness on our part. This conversation should be ours. This should not be the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency's conversation. This should not be the governor's conversation. This should be the Minnesota House and the Minnesota Senate's conversation as to what our vehicles are. And Representative Kraft, I think that is such an awesome idea to have a bill that says don't do this again. That'd be a really good one too. So thank you for that idea.
Lee Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to make the point that we had investment in public infrastructure coming to the state of Minnesota through the NEVI program. We found out recently that program is being cut by the Trump-Musk administration, and so we will only be able to.
Representative Kosnick.
Members, there is no such thing as Trump-Musk administration. You can make your comments, but just make them clear and factual, and we're not going to do that in this committee.
Lee Cagle, let's.
Thank you, Mr. Yep. Chair. He did add him to the cabinet. So, Representative Joy, do you believe that vehicle emissions cause lung health? Or I'm sorry, Murphy. You guys are. I'm sorry. Make the mistake. Hey,
that's
I was
okay.
Here when Tamara Tyson and the.
Light in Texas today.
Yeah, same thing.
They called. They go, Representative Murphy. I'm like,
okay. Let's get back to the question Murphy here.
I need the question again because I was listening to Mr. Representative Joy's response.
If you all would just hyphenate your names, it'd be fine.
Yeah. Representative Murphy, do you believe that vehicle emissions cause harm to lung health?
Representative
Sure,
Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, emissions are an issue. I'll talk a little bit more about the climate agenda as I wrap up. But, yeah, emissions are an issue. And I think if we have a big pollution problem, we should be looking at it. I don't think a 6% indifference that does all the things that it does for our auto dealers is the right answer for that. And obviously, we didn't even go forward with it. Nobody created a bill that said, let's go for 26, 27 last year. Obviously, we're not the only ones. So,
Lee Cagle, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you believe that emissions cause greenhouse gas emissions, which harm our environment and cause global climate change?
Representative Murphy.
There's real conversations that need to happen with that. So there's whistleblowers that are coming forward. Whistleblowers from MIT, Harvard, Columbia, UCLA, USC, the Undersecretary for the Secretary of Defense, Greenpeace. They're all coming forward to talk about the real conversation with climate. And we attempt that here. Representative Kraft and I got together and we wanted to talk about some of these moving parts. The public deserves those kind of conversations. Science is not settled, Representative. Science is always moving. When you say that, and I've heard it said, that the climate is done, the climate is proven, there's no move next to climate. That's not what experts are saying. So there's no, when science is, I'm not quoting it right, but when science is finished, the science here is done, is closed. This is a proven thing. There are other people that are agreeing with you, and that's part of the conversation that needs to happen. That's the real conversation that's happening. John Clauser, 2022 Nobel Peace Prize winner in physics, is one of the climate whistleblowers that's coming out. And we have all of these opportunities, and they have to come to us because a lot of times they're labeled as misinformation, so we don't actually get to hear them where we should get to hear them. But there is some documentaries that have done a great job. In that documentary, there are many, many, many experts that talk about climate change. And the real conversation ought to be talked about among us. It isn't closed. The science is never done. We can continue to talk about what's happening moving forward, and they do that. The documentary is called Climate the Movie, and it's a good listen. I'd watch it. But it's like Plandemic. It's like what we have when we learned about COVID. It's like Social Dilemma, where we learned about social issues. Sometimes when misinformation is shut down, we never get to hear those conversations, and we should. And we should be having them in public here. So my answer to you is, it's not done.
So before I go back to Lee Cagle on this, I just want to remind everybody, we are in transportation. This is going to be going to environment. We can have some spirited discussions about the transportation piece, and they'll have an even more spirited discussion in environment. So let's keep that in mind as we're moving forward here. Lee Cagle.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. I really hope then after environment it goes to health because, knowing that vehicle emissions do cause lung damage, the American Lung Association is very out front on this with vehicle emissions. And then I also want to go back to something that Mr. Graves said. He said this bill wouldn't really do anything, but it sends a message. And I would hope that, that we'd start doing some real work in this committee for the budget that's coming and try not to just have all these messaging bills that aren't going to go anywhere. And so that's kind of where I'm really hoping that as a committee over these next few weeks that we can really start to get the real work done and kind of just stop hearing these silly bills that aren't really doing anything.
Representative Scriba.
Thank you. I'm not sure if Assistant Commissioner. Yeah, I'd like to ask the Assistant Commissioner some questions. I think it's going to fit him better. Assistant Commissioner Kolosh, and excuse me for my naivety, but why are we doing this? And what is the data for?
Mr. Chair, Representative Scriba, we are doing this to reduce emissions from motor vehicles.
As I mentioned in my testimony, motor vehicles are significant contributors to both harmful air pollution across the state and also significant contributors to greenhouse gas emissions in the state. And these are the limited opportunities that the state has in this space in order to seek reductions from motor vehicles. So we were doing this in order to reduce the harmful air pollution, the greenhouse gases from motor vehicles that are being purchased and used in Minnesota. That was the purpose that we are doing that. Collecting the data is helpful because what that does is it shows us what the transition is looking like for Minnesota's fleet of vehicles so that we can make as accurate an estimate of air pollution and greenhouse gases from the vehicles in Minnesota. So we work closely with the Department of Transportation and the Department of Public Safety on tracking that data and being able to estimate what is the harmful air pollution coming from motor vehicles, and what are the greenhouse gases that are coming from motor vehicles.
Representative Scraba, any follow-up?
Yes. So if you're having this rule for 1 year, how do you use that data of 1 year for the rest of going forward? I'm at a loss for trying to, because what happens in a minute shouldn't dictate what I do with the rest of my life. So don't you think we need more data, or help me with that?
Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, that information that we will be collecting will continue to be collected by us, by the State Department of Public Safety on new vehicle registrations, and by the automobile industry and reporting that nationally as well. That data will continue to be collected. We'll continue to be tracking that. We'll continue to have the ability to have that data. So just because Minnesota Clean Cars rule stops going into effect after model year 2025, we're not going to lose track of the data. It will mean that automobile manufacturers will no longer have a compliance obligation to Minnesota for the new vehicle sales in Minnesota.
All right, Representative Crabo.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. Final question. Being from northern Minnesota, this is it's an issue, but it's not as dire of an issue it is down here, because one of the things that I've noticed more and more as we move forward, when you take your tests, the air quality tests, when we have fires and it comes down through Minnesota, is it noted on this that there is smoke in the air, or is that just part of the data?
Thank you, Assistant Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, Representative Scraba, we note that data. So we track that data. If it does have what we call a regulatory impact with EPA and federal standards, then there are ways that we can have that removed from the data set if it is substantially impacting our ability to comply with a federal standard. But we do track that. We do know which days are influenced by smoke intrusions from Canada or from other parts of the United States. And there is a method in the under the federal rules that we can go through to have that excluded if it is going to impact our compliance with a national ambient air quality standard.
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Myers, and thank you, Representative Joy, for bringing this bill forward. It's always a good, robust discussion when we have bills like this, talking about climate change, talking about air quality, talking about our transition to a cleaner economy and rulemaking, lawmaking. I just wanted to point out a couple things, just to clarify some things that I had heard today. We've talked about California. California isn't always sunny and warm. There are parts of California that does have snow. So, and I will say we can drive EVs here in Minnesota. I'm a recent owner of an EV, and when it was super cold, I was able to drive it, even though it was incredibly cold. The battery did go away faster, and I did have to charge it more. But certainly heat pumps and EVs work in Minnesota. We've proven that. So I think that's important to state. And I was also going to say we got a number of letters from different organizations, both pro and con. And the one that stands out to me, though, here is the one from the American Lung Association, which I think hopefully we have all seen. But they state that transportation emissions are a known cause of a wide range of health emergencies,
health disparities, and deaths. Traffic-related air pollution is associated with premature death, death due to lung cancer, increases in childhood respiratory infection, and the onset of new asthma cases in children and adults. And that was according to the most comprehensive review conducted by the Health Effects Institute. So I think when we're, you know, looking at what kind of cars we want to be driving, we want a wide range of options, and we want cars to not add to the problems that we're having with air quality. And certainly we've seen a lot more problems with air quality over the past year or so. I guess as a mom, as someone who's very concerned about the health of people, having more options for us to drive these cars that don't, you know, increase the emissions, I think is a real win. And then lastly, I would say that EVs are very affordable, you know, and when we're talking about affordability, we've brought that up a number of times here in this committee. EVs are really easy to maintain. You know, they don't have the same kind of machinery that a regular gas-powered car has, so they're a lot cheaper, and you know, there's a wide range of EVs you can buy, and I think with this clean cars standard, we were given a lot more options. You know, it's not just the high-end EVs, but also, you know, the low and mid-range. So lastly, I guess my question would be, you know, knowing that we need 68 votes to pass anything, knowing that we're basically looking at a tie whenever we go to the House floor, do you have bipartisan support on this bill? Do you have enough to pass this?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Representative Ream. And thank you for calling me Mr. Joy. I think he's a lot better looking than I am anyway, so thank you for referring to that. Yeah. We never know. I mean, if we have 68 or not. You said this gives us a lot more choices. Well, actually, you always had those choices. They never changed. You have the choice to buy, EV vehicles. I rode in a Tesla in December. I loved it. But anxiety is the reason why some people don't. And this person said range anxiety is a big deal. I had another person I talked to. He hooked a trailer on for the first time. And it was cold. And he had to run some other stuff. He had to be towed. That's the type of thing that not everybody needs to be dictated to have. You still have the options. EVs are affordable, but not like the cars that are going to replace them if the dealers aren't profitable and we don't end up having a good stream of new vehicles because dealers are actually run out of business. Then we're going to be living like the older vehicles, and we'll see a lot more vehicles that are older models. And so, yeah, they're affordable. If that's what you like, great. This bill just says that government and bureaucrats should not fund, and we funded over $500 billion since the Obama administration on climate agenda and climate change. So when you talk to me about research that is done by agencies or friends of agencies, you can understand why a poor report card probably doesn't put them on the slate anymore either for getting new money. And it's a big cash cow. The whole climate movement is a cash cow. And the universities, everybody has profited because we've made it that way as legislators.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Murphy, or Representative Murphy, I'll make sure to get it right. So I just wanted to draw a simple analogy. If I'm sick, and I go to the doctor, and I get a diagnosis that I have cancer, and I'm like, oof, okay, that's bad, but I want to double check because, you know, going through chemotherapy, it's a lot of money, it's a lot of time, it's painful, all those things, and I get another opinion, it's like, oh, you got cancer, and I do that another 100 times, and 97 of those doctors say that I have cancer, I'm pretty sure I have cancer. That's what we have when it comes to climate change. 97% of the world's scientists, actual scientists who look at climate, not just doctors or not just soil scientists, people who actually study the climate for their everyday, I think that's really important. So that's the point I wanted to make around climate. But I do want to come back to this concept in general, because something that I think we all agree with is we want to have a really robust economy here in Minnesota. One that is innovative, that we're putting the best products and better products in front of Minnesotans. And so something that I come from a family of small business owners, entrepreneurs who, you know, pulled themselves up by their bootstraps and really, really worked hard to make their businesses run. And sometimes you need additional help. You need additional infusion. You know, they were able to get that through small business loans. That was really helpful. Sometimes you need other market mechanisms to get a new product into market and taking off. And so what I think was really smart about this program design is it entered the market just as we've got prototypes, we've got some on the road, but we need to really escalate on that exponential model or exponential curve. And it is actually astounding if you look at the data from coming in about the $75 fee for the registration. It is amazing how clearly it is exponential growth in EV sales in Minnesota. I was astounded. I've done a lot of regression analysis on things. I have never seen real data exhibit such a close approximation of exponential growth. So I think this just goes to show the success that this one intervention for 1 year is having. And so I think it's just the right amount of time for us to show that success and help to provide better vehicles, a better product into our market. So that's just the comment I want to end with. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Representative. Representative Kraft, and then Kosnick, then we're going to Lee Cagle. Go. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Quick comments. I come back to this bill really doesn't do anything. We should reject it. But Representative Murphy mentioned our discussions on climate change, and I appreciate we'll have those with anyone at any point in time.
Representative Kraft, I just want to make sure, again, we talked about going to environment. I know we've talked a lot about environment stuff. This will go to that committee. I just want to make sure it's going to be a transportation question.
Mr. Chair, the transportation sector is the number one contributor to climate change in the state of Minnesota. So this is directly within transportation world. It can also be talked about in environment for sure, but it's I just urge you to allow conversation around environment issues.
And we have,
as well.
I think we've had a robust conversation. I'm just giving him a reminder here, but we all know this is going to environment. So I just want to make sure that we're staying on the topic.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate that, but I didn't go down this path. I didn't initiate this path. Representative Murphy did and mentioned my name as part of this path.
Yeah, and
so
I'm
responding to that, and I think I'm within my right to respond to that.
Mr. Representative Chair. Kraft, as the chair, this is the path that I'm going down, so I'm just reminding you the question you have. Please make it related to transportation.
I don't have a question. I have a comment, and it's related to Representative Murphy's comment about reference me about climate change. That is what I'm going to do. Do you want to try to? You want to stop me from doing that?
I'm just reminding you, Representative.
Mr. Chair, please remind the members to speak to the bill, and we will move along just fine.
Representative Kraft.
Representative Murphy. So I've appreciated our conversations, and we'll have them at any point. What I'll say is, I wish, and I've said this before to you, I wish with every fiber of my being that you were right. But I will tell you, the world is round, tobacco causes cancer, and climate change is happening and caused by humans, and we need to do something about it. Thank you.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy Joy, thank you for introducing the bill. I would just, you know, the comment was made that I think is important. I appreciate the discussion. We do try to keep it to the topic of the bill. That's just general rules of the legislature. But there is some flexibility, and this bill is going to environment. But the comment was made that this bill doesn't do anything, and I would want to remind members and would have a question for Representative Murphy. Does this bill prohibit electric vehicles or any other environmental choices that a consumer may make?
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Chair Kosnick, absolutely not. You're free. You have the freedom to buy whatever car you want. The dealer doesn't.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, I think that's an important distinction that's so far being lost in the discussion. But the other thing that it, I think is important in this hearing is that the Minnesota legislature, we're the body that's been elected to make the decisions for this state. And I would point members to some of the letters that are in the packet. It says House File 376 represents the necessary step in ensuring that Minnesota vehicle policies are both practical and equitable. And that's an important part of this bill. It says the free markets, in another letter, the free markets promotes the free markets as the cornerstone of our industry's efforts to compete and innovate and to address current and future energy needs. And I think that's an important thing that we lose. When we add more mandates and regulations, we stifle innovation. Another letter had a concern about the Clean Car Act is full of burdensome regulations that further stagnate our economy with no positive environmental outcomes. And I think it's important that this bill, having this hearing, recognizes that we are stifling, regulation stifles innovation and the economy. Minnesotans know what is best for Minnesotans is from the Fargo-Moorhead chamber. We're here, people have elected us to make these decisions instead of what we were under with the clean car mandates. Repealing these rules will restore Minnesota's ability to develop its own policy by reducing, so we can do it, and that is the job of the legislature. So there is great value in having this bill today before us as a legislature, and we can have difference of opinions, but I think one of the biggest things that I take away from your bill here today, Representative Murphy, is that we are here to represent Minnesotans and to make the decisions in our transportation systems and choices for Minnesotans, and to not have decisions made upon Minnesotans outside of the state. So thank you for bringing the bill. I do appreciate the discussion. We'll probably have more, and it's okay to disagree, but it's best to talk to the bill and the elements of the bill. And again, as Chair Myers had mentioned, the environmental questions, this bill is heading to the Environment Committee where they can be a little bit more studied and discuss those topics a little bit better. So thank you, Mr. Murphy. Representative Murphy.
Representative Murphy, in closing on your bill.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just like to say that it's not done yet. There's still harm being done. The model year 25s are going to be out for a while. There's some room to help the dealers. I think that's important. It just sends the right message that we're here, too. It's about consumer choices. It's not about taking away freedoms from businesses. So that's really important. It's great to hear that they're not going to do it next time. The governor and the MPCA, the agencies, are not going to do what the federal government threw out with the Chevron deal. But they can't rulemaker. We're the rulemakers, and we should be standing up for that. So that's why it's really important for us to make sure that we follow through. The bottom line is that this is about government control. It's not really about reducing anything. Otherwise, we would have done it for a long series of years. This is about government control, and that's why I think it's important that bills like this make it and they're heard. I appreciate the robust conversation that we had, and I think we're right on. I think it's more than just cars. And I appreciate that, and I certainly don't want to, you know, insinuate that I felt bad. I think the conversations that I've had with members are the real conversations that we all should be having. They're not one-sided. You don't call it misinformation when it comes from somebody else. So with that, I would like to make a motion to send this bill off to the Environmental Committee.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Renews his motion to refer House File 376 to Environment. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Motion passes. This will be headed to Environment. Thank you, Representative Murphy. Next bill we have up is House File 367. I will make the motion to refer 367 to judiciary and civil law. Representative Murphy, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill about public safety. It changes the penalty for obstructing a highway. And so it kind of stems from issues we had in 2020 where many highways at the same time were obstructed, and it actually caused problems for our law enforcement and for first responders. This imposes a civil penalty. It allows for standing in court so that protesters could be sued, and protects the protesters as well. It can help avoid accidents altogether when we don't have these busy highways. Part of an area where protests are, and it just allows a little more activity from our law enforcement, and again, makes it easier for first responders.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Testifiers we have are, is it Terry Nelson? Please state your name and who you're with, please.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Teresa Nelson, and I am legal director for the ACLU of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to speak with you today on our opposition to House File 367. We oppose this bill because it's unnecessary. It will have a chilling effect on the exercise of constitutionally protected speech. It allows for liability that's vastly disproportionate to the offense, and it transforms criminal law into a vehicle for personal vengeance. The right to free speech is a cornerstone of our democracy, and the Constitution firmly protects protests and speech that, especially when that speech stirs anger, challenges government policy, and induces dissatisfaction with the status quo. It's also important to remember that law enforcement agents have an affirmative duty to ensure that the rights of protesters and the press are protected. It's one of their critical government functions. So while this bill is stated in terms of criminal conduct, it is really aimed at expressive speech and conduct. Throughout our history, we've witnessed acts of civil disobedience, including the Boston Tea Party, the Edmund Pettus Bridge, student campus occupations against the Vietnam War, to today. And although in the moment, those historical protests may not have garnered significant public support, we now celebrate many of them as important turning points in our history. So the bill is unnecessary because we've already got ample laws on the books to address demonstrations that get out of hand, including criminal charges. But this bill would also have an unjustified chilling effect on the exercise of free speech. People who consider going to a protest will face the specter of having to defend potentially hundreds of lawsuits and significant money damages. And this will likely chill people from participating in demonstrations, even if they have no intention of violating the law. This bill would also allow for punishments that are vastly out of proportion to the conduct at issue. Obstruction of a highway often results in inconvenience. And because there's no standard for the type of injury that could incur liability from this bill, this would allow every person who felt injured by a mere inconvenience to sue for damages. The potential for multiple lawsuits is even greater when the subject matter of the protest is controversial. And by allowing the state or political subdivision to choose between pursuing criminal charges for violation of 609.74 or civil liability, House File 367 would allow a municipality to target speech with which it disagrees for harsher punishment. The maximum fine for a misdemeanor is $1,000, but a municipality could seek civil damages far in excess of that amount, and they could do so based on hostility to the message conveyed by protesters. Instead of guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, they would just have to show that it's more likely than not that the person violated the statute. So put simply, this punishment doesn't fit the crime, and the punishment will be far harsher if the content of the speech is controversial. Lastly, I'm almost done, sorry. House File 367 turns the criminal legal system on its head by turning specific criminal prohibitions into a vehicle for personal vengeance. Our criminal code is designed to spell out prohibited conduct and prescribe punishment for violating those laws. But this bill takes a law that's intended to protect public safety and to protect society in general and allows it to be used as a means of meting out personal grudges and opposition to messages conveyed. It would invite hundreds of lawsuits against even a lone protester who stands in the middle of Snelling Avenue, which is a highway, for 5 minutes waving a rainbow flag or a Confederate flag or any other flag that represents their chosen message. So House File 367 will not deter conduct or improve public safety. The only thing it will do is send a message that to political activists that dissent is unacceptable in Minnesota. And if that happens, we all suffer. I respectfully urge you to vote against House File 367. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony. Not seeing anybody else. Is there anybody from the public that would like to testify? Seeing none, I will open it up for member questions or discussion. Lead Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I feel like I'm in deja vu. We had this bill in 2017. I guess Chair Kosnick and I were probably the only ones that were here.
I don't remember it exactly, but...
Really? Sorry. I'm not sorry.
Mr. Chair, Lead Cagle, I don't remember it exactly, but I'm curious to hear your recollection, but... I was there.
Yeah. So thank you, Mr. Chair. This was the bill that we had on the floor in 2017 where we had a bunch of women of color standing up and talking about how this would directly affect their communities. And then we had a bunch of people in the retiring room playing cards and watching baseball and not paying attention to any of the women on the floor speaking about how this would harm their communities. So we're bringing this back up. So that's fun. So this criminalizes free speech, and this is a really scary trend that we're seeing not only here at the state level, but at the federal level. We have oligarchs taking over our system. We have a president who's best friends with Vladimir Putin. Like, do we need to become a state that criminalizes our First Amendment? Again, we've legislated this bill in the past. We had debates on the House floor. This is not going to get 68 votes. Again, let's please stop wasting our time with these messaging bills and get to work.
Any other member discussion, questions? Representative Anderson?
I'll be brief. I just want to respond quickly. I am a huge supporter of free speech. Like, people can say whatever they want. Nothing should be shut off ever. But they can't obstruct freeways. That is totally and completely different than your free speech rights. That is violation of everyone who's, everyone else to try to make your message. You can stand in a bridge. You can stand in a building. You can stand on the side of the road. You can do whatever you want. And say whatever you want. I don't care what you say. You can say, you can say we're Nazis. You can say, must Trump administration, whatever you want to say. And you have a right to say things. But you don't have a right to be obstructing freeways. And that's what this is about. And I think I'm glad you brought this bill. I think we need to just at some point put all this into perspective. So, and I'll be supporting this. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other members? Representative Tapke? I think I saw his finger first. Sorry.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I want to make sure we're clear about what Representative Anderson just said with everything there, is that we're all for free speech and we're all for First Amendment right to peaceably assemble unless they slow down cars. I have the floor. Thank you.
Tapke has the floor.
So I mean, that is literally what you just said, is the right to drive is more important than your First Amendment constitutional rights. And that is, we have a repetition, obviously voting no on this bill today, because I don't think it is good for democracy. I don't think it's good for America. I don't think it's good for Minnesota, for a variety of reasons. But this is a continuation of things that we're constantly talking about so far this session, of pulling back people's rights and not making it able for people to express their opinions and not making it and pulling back on freedoms. And it's a really bad trend and it's a really bad direction that we're going. Like, I obviously don't want people to be in harm's way. I don't want that to happen and for that to be part of where we're going. But there is a constant and consistent bashing of people's rights to be who they are, where they want to go, and who they want to be in Minnesota. And this is a continuation of that. And Representative Murphy, I don't think that you, I'm sure that you disagree with that, but how do you respond to the fact that this is directly reducing people's rights, First Amendment rights in the United States Constitution and their ability to exercise those rights? And where do we, where do you see this going? Like, what do you see as happening with these types of bills that are constantly coming forward that I don't believe are anything but good intentioned? But there's no way to look at this other than this is a direct restriction of people's First Amendment, of my First Amendment rights and people to ability to protest and assemble and have free speech.
If I could interject, Mr. Chair, as a
Chair Kosnick,
just a point of order to remind the committee members, it is against our rules and customs to challenge the path of a bill for lack of support. Every member has an election certificate, and you all have the right to have a bill hearing, whether you it's moving in the Senate, whether you think you have one vote or 10 votes or 90 votes. And so we don't question that as a rule. And so I just want to remind members that, but I do appreciate the discussion.
And Mr. Chair, just to clarify, my intent wasn't that. My intent was, what is the purpose of this, not the path and not the where it's going, but what is the real purpose of doing this other than to stifle free speech?
Representative Tabke, thanks for clarifying that. It was mentioned a couple of times earlier, so that's why I brought it up. But great question.
Representative Murphy.
Mr. Chair, Representative Tabke, thank you. I mean, as far as free speech, I'm all in for free speech. But you know who else has rights? The people that are sitting in the ambulance waiting to get through. And this only says impassable and dangerous. This doesn't mean you can't stand by a side of a road. It just means you can't block the road, and because other people have rights too. You can't yell fire in an elevator either. So people have rights. And this just gives them the ability to say that problem affected me negatively, and that gives them the right to their rights, speech. So definitely free speech. We've seen more things about misinformation than the last in a long period of time. We shouldn't be doing that. People should be able to say what they want. So, but I don't think this does this. I think this helps first responders. I think it prevents people from getting hurt that are on an interstate when they shouldn't be, because they could be the ones, the protesters could be the ones being hurt. So public safety is the reason.
Representative Joy.
Yeah, just real quick, just some comments on this. You know, this is, I think we all understand the free speech and everything like that. This is no different than a constituent that called me last year and said they got a ticket on the highway for driving too slow. Now, if they would have said they were protesting, they probably wouldn't have got the ticket. But this is just putting checks and balances and everything. Make sure they're not blocking highways for when people need the services, when you need an ambulance, when you need something. You know, like Representative Murphy just said, stand on the side of the road, fine. Don't block it. You know, let the emergency personnel get through. This I think, isn't that hard of a bill. Thank you.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I just want to be really clear here. So Representative Murphy, is it legal today, before this bill, to obstruct a road or a freeway? Is it legal? Can I go do that and is that legal for me to do that today?
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Kraft. There are public nuisance laws that have criminal effect for that, but it doesn't allow the people that were actually affected. If somebody died in the ambulance on the way and you were blocking them, this gives them a civil remedy. And so that's what changes. The public nuisance side doesn't change, but that's the biggest change in it, is it imposes a civil penalty.
Mr. Burse, is there anything you'd like to add to that?
Mr. Chair and members, current law is actually referenced in House File 367. The reference is to Section 609.74, and in that language, there is a misdemeanor penalty that's established for interference or obstruction or rendering dangerous passage of any public right-of-way or highway. So that's one of the criminal provisions that could potentially be used in situations involving obstruction of a highway.
Representative Crash.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. So it's already legal. I urge you all to really think carefully about voting for this bill. Right? What we just heard from the folks at the ACLU is a chilling effect on free speech, transforms criminal law into personal vengeance, unnecessary, would allow every person that felt injured to sue. It would equally apply if someone went out to Snelling Avenue and waved a rainbow flag or a Confederate flag. This is chilling free speech. And the other thing I think it's doing is probably the personal injury lawyers are salivating at this, of the amount of lawsuits that are going to come from this and gum things up. I mean, is that really what we want? Look, I understand what your concern, but this is one of those when if you really think what this does, it is scary. All right, so again, appreciate it, but please, folks, if you care about free speech, this chills it, and the issue that you're saying is already illegal. Let's be really careful here.
Representative Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Murphy. So kind of along this conversation, I'd just like to ask, what disincentives currently exist for highway protests? What disincentivizes a person from going to protest on a highway?
Representative Murphy or nonpartisan staff?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll take a stab at it. Thank you, Representative. I think if you look at it the other way around, it actually makes more sense. For right now, the penalty for public nuisance is a misdemeanor. Most of those people that were protesters there was never a crime that they were let go, and so there's not enough teeth in it for people that are actually offended. And so the people that are offended, the one that was in the ambulance, the people that got hit, the person that was in a car accident because of it, the protester that got hit, they're the victims in this. I don't know if that answered your question, but that's that. And I would also look to our health research to help answer that if you need more information.
Representative Jones.
Yeah, I don't think I need additional information from House Research. Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Murphy. I think you've answered that. So there are criminal charges are a disincentive to people wanting to do this. I mean, I don't think people want a misdemeanor on their record, right? I think that's a clear disincentive. I think also potential bodily harm is a clear disincentive. I think any one of us, we don't regularly go out into a highway walking on there because it's scary, we could get hit by a car. So I think there are already sufficient disincentives, both from a legal perspective and from just a human existence perspective. And so I would say that I don't see a need for this law.
Representative Green.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Representative Murphy. My question is a follow-up to something that you just talked about with research. It sounds like you're talking about an event that happened that included an ambulance not being able to get in. So my question is, what kind of research do you have that there have been incidents where people are impacted and that you're able to point to a specific person to hold them accountable?
Representative Murphy.
One piece of information I have from Colorado, and they had similar problems during the same time frame, and there were people that were struck. You know, I 244. There were people that were struck in Tulsa, in Colorado too. So there's people that are becoming injured because of this. And again, we're just talking about dangerous and impassable. When you're in a freeway, and if you're looking out for your own personal health, that'll be a poor place to stand, because people are coming. And so, was it their fault that they ran into protesters, or was it because they didn't see them, they didn't see them fast enough? What was it? But now we're actually infringing on their rights too. So Colorado, Oklahoma, Minnesota. At that time in Minnesota, we had multiple freeways that were obstructed at the same time.
Representative Green.
Yep, just to follow up. Thank you, Chair. So I guess I'm just a little bit confused, because I think that this bill opens up just a can of worms on who's actually being held accountable. And you want to talk about civil liability. That's what this is about. But how do we make those connections? How do we know if you have protesters, you have 100 people outside, which one of those people are are responsible. How do you legislate that? Or I should say implement that.
Representative Murphy, if you want to answer, I'll again just remind everybody it's going to judiciary, where I'm sure those conversations will take place.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just judiciary, I mean, that's why we have judges that decide this. It goes through the same channels as we've always taken it through. And we have people there that we put in those places for that. And so, again, we're looking at for the rights of all people, too, even the people that are on those roads that are protesters or the people traveling through or the person that's in the ambulance that's waiting to get through.
Mr. Chair, I want to request a roll call.
Roll call being requested. We will do a roll call at the vote. Representative Green, are you?
Yeah, no, just one quick follow-up, Chair. Yep. Thank you. I just I just worry about criminalizing free speech, and that's what this bill does. So I am not in support of it.
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Chair Myers, and thank you, Representative Murphy, for bringing this bill forward. Another good discussion here. So I have a question about the definition of person. My understanding is that this legislation you're proposing has changed the definition of person, and I don't know if you can answer that or if nonpartisan could answer that for me. That would be very helpful.
Representative Murphy or nonpartisan staff.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will refer to Mr. Burris.
Mr. Burris.
Mr. Chair, Representative Ream, so you can see the definition that's established for this section, and that is found in subdivision 1. So it's on lines 1.7 to 1.8. It lists out the type of entities that would be included in when that term is used.
Representative Ream.
Thank you, Mr. Burris. So is that a change from the past? Because I guess I'm wondering, is this, with this new legislation, if it were passed, would it allow people to sue not only a person, but a group or a church or, an agency? Would it open up lawsuits in a way that hadn't been opened before?
Is that a question for nonpartisan?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Mr. Burris?
Mr. Chair, Representative Ream, on the lawsuit side of things, I might have to get back to you, defer to other colleagues. I will note that the way the civil liability provision is set up in Subdivision 2, it refers to liability to an injured person. So that's, potentially a natural individual or an agency or political subdivision or another private entity.
Representative Ream.
Thank you. I guess my concern is that if the definition of person is that broad, the lawsuits could be huge. I am concerned about this infringement on First Amendment rights. It would seem that if you don't have a lot of money, if you're not, willing to risk a lawsuit, you wouldn't be able to protest, and I feel like that's a bit of an issue here with this proposed legislation. So just leaving that comment there. Thank you.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This whole conversation just continues to shock me that we have individuals who are defending criminal activity. They're saying, under the guise of something that it's truly not, we're protecting the rights of criminals. Things that they're doing that are illegal, they're against the law. And what we're forgetting is the people who are harmed who are doing exactly what the law entails. Do you all remember the truck driver who was driving on I-35, had no idea that there were protesters illegally obstructing the roads, and he drove through them at 70 miles an hour, not realizing what he was doing. And then when he stopped, and thank the Lord he didn't hit anyone, but they decided to rip him out of his truck and beat him for something he had no intention of doing. He was in the right place doing the right thing at a time when people were deciding to do an illegal act. And we have individuals defending those criminal activities saying, I can't believe this. They're sitting here defending a criminal act and not having any compassion whatsoever for the individual who did the exact right thing and received bodily harm
as a result of doing the right thing in a place he was supposed to be. This is just shocking. Well, it's actually not shocking because it's par for the course. It is par for the course. So this individual who was beaten on camera by individuals, so you want to talk about how do you police this up? There's video footage of this individual being beaten for doing the right thing, stopping, not hitting anyone, thank heaven. It's on camera, and no one was charged for it. No one was charged for this beating. Now, that's a problem. And if you say that someone getting beaten infringes on someone else's constitutional rights, I think you need to check yourself.
Representative Tabke.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, your comments earlier brought up two questions in my head as regard to how this bill would change what's going forward. So there have been many instances of people intentionally driving into protests, whether that be on a street, whether that be other places. And we know that many what we consider streets in Minnesota are also deemed, termed as highways. So first, what would happen in this instance if this were to pass, if someone sees people protesting in front of them on, say, Hennepin Avenue, and then from there, that person has ample time to stop but chooses not to and plows into that crowd. Would that then be, based on your bill, would that be the protester's fault or the person driving? What's your interpretation of how this would change that law?
Representative Murphy.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Tabke. You know, I think we still have to rely on judges to do what they do. This just says that if you're going to put yourself on there and then you cause something to happen to someone else, they have a civil remedy. They have a civil remedy to say, you caused me an issue. If you're doing that aggressive act, I don't think this changes anything. I think this is really, this is, you know, you have every right to pursue that person that did it, that ran through people. So, but it's different. This is really to protect them. And I was just looking at some of the other notes. There's a lot of examples of protesters are the ones that are hurt because they're not seeing them, you know. And so I don't know. I think what you're saying is that's still the remedy that has to come from, a case. And if there, that certainly sounds criminal to me. So.
And one more question. Mr.
Representative Tabke.
So that, I'm just getting at what your intent is on doing this. If your intent is to have the protesters be responsible, be liable for an egregious act such as that. And so then on a similar path of things, like what if someone is simply crossing the road and they see somebody who's like, this happens to me all the time, where I'm crossing the road and I go take my dog for a walk and somebody's coming at me fast and I tell them to stop at the stop sign. And if that person didn't stop at the stop sign and plowed my dog and me over, would that be a protest if I were in the middle of the road based on how you have this bill written today?
Representative Murphy, and I will say, depends if you're jaywalking, and I know somebody dropped that bill, but Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative. This answer, dangerous and impassable. So unless you were standing there with your dog and decided that's where you're going to hitch him to a post, that wouldn't apply. This is for dangerous and impassable. That's it. That's the litmus test for if you're in a position where now you become a possible civil remedy if you cause the other person a problem.
Thank you. Representative Jones? Oh, you're good. Okay. Representative Kosnick?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Murphy, I appreciate the discussion, committee members' discussion on this, and it's hard to stay in the transportation realm because it's very interesting bill, a subject matter, and the criminal element of it, or the judicial element of it. But I think it's important, for this committee to understand that this is dealing with passage on a public highway and what our purposes of our highways are. And so I appreciate that the bill is introduced, that we're talking about it. From the judicial side, I think there's important discussions there too, but I will refrain from comments on that part. But it was questioned that if somebody values the right to drive, that might be more important than the First Amendment. And I don't see that is the
the purpose of this bill or not. I think there are ample, and it's been proven, there's place for First Amendment and protected speech. And in the middle of a highway is, I don't believe, should be protected area for First Amendment speech. So we will continue to have that discussion. I appreciate bringing the bill forward again and the members' discussion. And Mr. Chair, if I could just evolve for a second too for the committee. We're going to possibly transition in the committee here, and we'll be hearing bills that we may like, we may might not like, and I hope we hear a lot of bills that both sides of the aisle do find agreement in. And but even though you know, there, we need to recognize that there are opportunities to hear bills that we may not like, that may not pass this legislature. A lot of bills have to go through many legislatures before they pass, and it's okay to have those discussions. I don't know that this bill is one of those bills or not. Maybe it's going to the floor, and or we're going to judiciary, and you know, maybe it passes this session. I don't know, and I'm not questioning the path. But just for the committee to understand, it's okay to have a good discussion, respect each other, respect the opinions, because we're going to need to do more of that as we move forward and move towards the end of May. So I appreciate the committee's discussion and respect for each other in their opinions.
Representative Murphy, in closing.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd just like to thank everybody for the discussion. I think it was really needed. You know, I'm in complete support of the free speech and the ability for people to protest, but that's not what this is about. This is making sure that people are protected so that they're for their safety. That's the really important part of it. And especially law enforcement and our first responders that require to be moved. And I don't think it's the limitations that it sets, I don't think are reasonable to say that infringes on their free speech rights. So with that, I'll move to motion to move the bill forward.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. I'll renew your motion to refer House File 367 to Judiciary Civil Law. Roll call has been requested, so we will take the roll.
Chair Kosnick.
Yes.
Vice Chair Myers.
Aye.
Representative Anderson.
Yes.
Representative Berg, excused. Representative Fogelman.
Yes.
Representative Green.
No.
Representative Jones.
No.
Representative Joy?
Yes.
Representative Kraft?
No.
Representative Murphy?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Yes.
Representative Reed?
No.
Representative Sensenmura?
No.
Representative Scraba?
Yes.
Representative Tabke?
No.
Being eight yeses and six noes, the motion passes. This will be moving on to Judiciary and Civil Law. Not seeing any other thing before the committee here. Our next meeting will be March 3rd. I close the meeting. Adjourn the meeting.